Time to talk about the health of your personal computer, or maybe your software. Peter Greed of InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant, back once again to be with us. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for listening. If you have a question, something going on with yours, or maybe you have a question about the internet itself or the web, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. And don't be afraid if you think you have a question that might, you know, sound not the smartest. Why, that's good. There are probably
there are probably a lot
of other people with the same question. So, for sure, don't worry about that. Just call in with your questions. Pete, welcome back.
Always great, Larry.
And I'll tell you what, we've got plenty of things we can talk about today, I think. You seeing anything new out there?
Oh, let's see. I would say if you haven't upgraded the memory in your desktop or notebook computer to at least 1 gig of RAM and you're running Windows XP, or if you're running Vista, you should be using that amount or more. The time, just keep looking at the sales and, you know.
There's a lot out there now.
Yeah, check what kind of memory you need and then go for it, because it makes a world of difference.
Yeah.
It really does. You know, we got a question here about why so much, bulk email or spam and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Never really talked about the reason why, just that we get it.
Yeah.
The reason why, there's a lot of reasons.
One is it's cheap to send.
Well, it's not so much that it's cheap. Cheap to send is kind of like, because it is, then we can do all the reasons why we do these, or the why people are doing these things, other than, you know, being included in a large email list to be notified of something like a product update or a special deal or cheap airfares, you know, that kind of stuff. But we're talking about why do people send out these emails enticing you, you know, for different things. Well, aside from the phishing scams, where, you know, the payoffs are great because there they get access or breach somebody's security to a bank account or a credit card or personal information, and then can carry that further. And you know, that's in the felony category.
Right.
And unfortunately, with the ones that are internationally originated, it's really hard for them to go out and, you know, get these people, you know, get them back. And it really creates a lot of headaches for the individual that's, you know, been scammed. But the other reason is there's what I would call a bounty, which can be categorized as commission fees, referral fees, finder fees, or spreading something that generates revenue.
Mm-hmm.
And that could be anything from, you know, hey, do you want to refinance your mortgage? Or, you know, to buy a specific stock, which could fit into a scam because it's trying to elevate the price of a stock that maybe somebody bought or a group of people bought. But applications that may have different levels of, you know, almost like a pyramid scheme, but it can be tracked electronically so that, you know, people get, you know, a nickel here, or, you know, they qualify for the free iPod or the free Xbox 360 and so forth, where you get enough people in your group to generate this, you know, so-called revenue that either pays for an item or, you know, you actually get paid, where it gets money is transferred to, you know, your bank account or a PayPal account. So, you know, there's a lot of reasons why. But so will it ever go away? Probably not, because there's always going to be some kind of gimmick or catch, you know, to the internet technology and, you know, trying to spread something, spreading the word. They call that viral marketing.
Mm-hmm.
Some people call it guerrilla marketing in terms of, you know, what we do face to face, but, you know, using different tactics to try and market a product. But online, through email and websites, things can spread virally very quickly because you can multiply the numbers very quickly and get people, you know, enticed and, you know, all working together. And the numbers, you know, they could be small, but because it spreads so quickly, pennies become dollars, become more, and so the rewards are greater, and that's why they do it.
Well, Larry and DePierre, I trust you have a question for us. Hi, Larry.
Hi, Larry. Yes, I do. I have a question about digital photographs, converting them to a usable thing so for embroidery sewing machines. What I'm using now is PC Paint, where I can take and digitize the individual pixels.
Mm-hmm.
Are there any super programs or any good programs now available that I can convert to, say, a bitmap format or something that I can easily...
I know there are embroidery programs and also, you know, basically embroidery machines that come with software, which would probably convert, you know, any of your pictures or drawings or whatever you wanted to use to, you know, the format that the software requires to talk to the device to do the embroidery.
See, what I want to do is edit them, you know,
okay.
Individually change the pixels to create a different look
sure.
to the, and do you know if there are any software available?
Well, when you edit the picture, you're still putting it in what I would call its native format, and then, you know, for embroidery purposes, you would, you know, if you're using a machine to render that, you know, for doing the actual embroidering, you know, that would be that software that would take whatever you've edited. If you want to edit pictures, you know, there's Photoshop, and you can go online and check out, if you typed in photo editing software in Google, you'd probably come up with quite a few links that would direct you to products that do that. You could also go to some of the sites that do reviews of products, like CNET.com, C-N-E-T. .com mm-hmm. reviews a lot of different products and software. I think their specific software site is called downloads.com, and, you know, you could search through that as well. There might even be like a site like epinions.com might even have some embroidery software and products that have been reviewed by people, you know, actual users versus, you know, a commercial or a magazine kind of review. You also might want to go to some of the groups out there. So if you were to go to Google and then click on groups when you see the search, or I believe now, I don't understand why they put it where you have to click more to go to groups.
No.
I think groups is one of the more important ones, but they're obviously trying to promote other features other than just the groups. But you could also type in groups.google.com. And those would be the discussion or news groups that talk, that where people are talking about different products, you know, and feedback and mm-hmm. and sometimes bugs that they come across, because you're usually not the only one using it and finding a flaw in something.
My wife's really good at that. She just created a logo for to put on a golf ball. I've got a little golf outing coming up, and so she created this on her Mac, and it looks great. She did it lickety-split, little golf ball with a tee and so forth and so on. It's a lot of fun. Larry, thanks for calling. Appreciate it. Jerry in Grafton, it's your turn. Hi, Jerry.
Good morning, guys.
Morning.
Hi. I've got a laptop that's almost 5 years old. It's physically breaking down, and it's getting jammed and jammed and jammed and going slower and slower. I'm thinking of going from the XP format into an Apple. Am I going to have any problems with my old software and converting everything? And will my printer run with it? Or
what kind of things are you doing?
A lot of writing, a lot of photos, PowerPoint, all kinds of stuff. I just unloaded about, let's see, the hard drive. I got a 20 gig hard drive. It was over 60% full. I downloaded to the external hard drive. I'm now at under 40%, and it's operating,
mm-hmm.
but still slow.
Well, what are you using for the writing, the photos, and so forth? Are you using Microsoft products?
No, I'm using Adobe Photoshop Elements 2 or Photoshop Elements 5.0 Special Edition.
Okay. And you mentioned PowerPoint?
Yep. That's Microsoft.
Okay, well, all those products are available for the Mac. I don't know what their cross-licensing, you know, fee is in terms of, like, upgrading to a different platform. It would probably be, you'd have to probably contact them or visit their website and see.
You mean
what
Macs?
Right. Well, okay. No, not Mac's website, but, like, Microsoft and also Adobe.
Okay.
To see. You may even have to email them and or call them, you know, and see if you can get through and find out and say, hey, I own your product on a PC and I want to move over to an Apple platform, Macintosh. Yeah. What am I going to have to pay for that? So the files will be convertible.
The files will be.
Yeah, it's just your applications. You have to get new versions of the
I'll
software.
So I'll probably have to get upgraded applications. What about my old printer and my scanner? Because the printer and scanner are basically the same age.
Okay. And they're separate.
Actually, they might be older, come to think of it. I think I had those before. The printer I've got is an HP, and it prints two sides.
Uh-huh.
I've got a scanner that's capable of scanning 4x5 transparency, so this is not just,
right.
Run-of-the-mill stuff.
Well, I could tell you a lot has changed.
Yeah, I know.
And you probably could consider, you know, one that does all of the above. The output quality has increased quite a bit.
Okay.
And the costs have come down quite a bit. So
you might want to look at that. I'd be really strongly tempted.
I mean, you can get a scanner with rebates. I've seen them for less than $50.
Yeah,
you can
do they scan transparencies? I'm talking about 4x5 transparencies.
Yeah, you might have to get, you might have to do a little research on that. But you know, the high end scanners that they sell at some of the retail outlets approach a neighborhood of about $300 with automatic document feeders and slide adapters.
Okay.
So.
So I might be talking all new equipment when I change.
Yeah, you know, and the other thing is, you'd have to look and see if there would be the Mac drivers for your scanner.
Okay.
The interface, I'm going to make an assumption here, the scanner might be using a USB.
Yes, it is.
You'll probably be able to get away with that.
Okay.
But you'd have to find the Mac drivers, and that could or cannot be an issue.
Okay.
And then as far as the printer, you know, it's the same thing, and then making sure, either you have enough ports or you'll have to get a USB hub.
I've already got that.
Yeah. But you may have to, it may be earlier than what the Mac.
Sure. Yeah.
You'll just have to. It might be less headaches.
I to hear get, what you're saying.
And less work
to
get
start
the,
over from scratch.
Right, and and look at the shortcomings of what you have. You know, saying what would I like to improve upon? What would I like the printer to do? Plus, do more of, or do it faster, or do the resolution output better? The size of the paper. The scanner, you know, the pixelation, do you want higher resolution, you know, things like that, because a lot's changed in 5 years.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I think the key thing is checking on the applications and seeing if you can get some kind of credit for having owned those applications and then transferring over to the Apple platform so you don't have to pay full price.
Yep.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks very much.
Yep.
Appreciate it. Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer. And you are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking computers today with Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant. Thanks for listening in. And lots of callers online, so we'll go back to the phones. And Dawn in Waukesha, you are next. Hi, Dawn.
Hi, Larry. Hi, Peter.
Hi.
And you guys are on. You don't know how timely this conversation is. I'm on my way to work, so I'll have to listen to the response on the web replay, the program for today. But anyway, I downloaded something last night for Internet Explorer, or actually it was early in the day, that my Norton said had low risk, and my computer is now locked up. And I can get it started in safe mode, but when I get onto safe mode and get at the PowerPoint presentation that I'm working on for school for tomorrow, I can't print it out because it's the printer drivers for my my two printers that I have don't show up, and making adjustments, I was having all kinds of trouble. Any ideas?
So you say you start your computer up in the safe mode. Can you get it back to the regular desktop?
When I get it back to the regular desktop.
That's when you're saying the printer drivers have disappeared?
I can't. When I have it, if it's not in safe mode and I'm just on the regular desktop itself,
right,
where I see all my icons come
right,
up.
Right.
When I use the mouse and try to click and open anything, it stays locked.
Okay.
The only way I can open a program is in safe mode.
Okay. Have you tried to use the restore fee? What version of Windows are you using?
I've got Windows XP.
Okay.
Home Edition and with the
Service Pack 2.
Service Pack 2, yeah.
Okay. Have you tried doing the restore feature at all?
I'm not sure how to get there.
Okay. It's you know, I'll tell you, and hopefully you can remember it, because you said, I think you said you're driving. We don't want you to be taking notes.
No, absolutely not. I drive with two hands and talking to a speakerphone.
Okay. What you do is go in the safe mode and then click on Start, then Accessories, and then System Tools. And within System Tools, you'll see System Restore. And then within System Restore, there's an option to restore to an earlier access point. And what you want to do is go back prior to, I believe you said yesterday, so you know, look and see where a restore point is prior to that, and do the restore. So this is within safe mode, and then let the system reboot. And hopefully you should get, you know, number one, you have the restore turned on, and number two, you know, it takes it back prior to, and, you know, check and see that your printer drivers are back there. And then what I would do is do a shutdown and reboot again. And, you know, don't use your computer until you do that second shutdown and restart again.
Okay.
All right.
If that doesn't work, then go to infostar.com and click on any of the email links that you see there and on the bottom of the page and tell me that, you know, I need more help, and I'll see if I send you some more suggestions.
Okay,
that's the first thing. That's the first thing I would try. Click on Start, then click on Accessories, and then System Tools, and then System Restore. And once you get there, you'll see they give you a calendar and say, you know, here's the date and the time, and you click on it, and then your system, you click OK, and then your system reboots, and hopefully it'll come back like magic.
Good luck, Don.
I know when I first saw that at a Windows exhibit for a vendor, and I believe it, I think it was like around Windows 98, and they said, you know, here, check this out, and I watched it, and I was like, no. And then, you know, Microsoft eventually incorporated their product within the operating system. It was just, it's great, because, you know, if you install an application that whacks out your system, you know, makes it so it doesn't work, so it doesn't access the internet anymore, or causes you grief. Some of the software that you install is what I would call intelligent enough to create the restore point for you, but the really precautionary thing is to create the restore point before you do the installation, then do the install, and if it screws it up, you know, you wax out your system, then you can always go back to what you knew worked versus, you know, something that you still have a question mark about.
Good luck, Don. Thanks.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Bob in Milwaukee, we'll turn to you next. Hi, Bob.
Yeah, good morning.
Morning.
I'm running Windows XP Home, and I use TurboTax, putting my information into a scan disk. I want to convert that now onto a CD, and I'm having trouble making that copy.
So you created a version of a TurboTax file that's on...
Yeah, all my tax information is on the scan disk.
Okay, so you mean like on a little...
one of these little plug-in units.
Right.
Yeah.
So you're having a problem getting the file from that to a CD?
Correct. If I use a CD, then it's a permanent to keep with my tax papers.
Right. Should be simple, you know, just if you want to call it, some people use a flash drive or a media disk, and Should be able to locate it through Windows Explorer on your system. And, you know, you click on My Computer, and then My Computer opens up all the drives and the folders that are available to you. And if you have network connections, it says Network Places. And then usually if there are multiple files or folders located on one of the drives, you click on the plus symbol next to it, and it expands it. So it gives you all those folders, and then you go within that folder that maybe you created, and let's say you called it taxes, then the files will be located within that folder. Then you can highlight them either by clicking on, you know, clicking on one and then pulling it to your other drive. So in the case of the CD, you would, you know, would pull it to or drag it to the CD drive, and then just release and drop it on it, and it'll ask you if you want to copy it or move it, and you click on, you know, you say copy, and then you can keep on doing that, and then eventually when you're done, you can, you'll be able, you'll have probably on the lower right hand corner of your screen, it'll say you have files waiting to be written to your CD.
Okay.
And then you just click on that, and then you can go ahead and you know, proceed with writing them to the CD drive.
Okay, that's a slide it rather than telling it to copy it.
Yeah, I usually slide them across from one, you know, one location to another.
Okay, I'll go that route then.
So some people, if you have difficulties with that, you could actually open up two windows of Windows Explorer.
Yeah.
So you have your source drive and folders open, and then on the other window you have your destination or target,
mm-hmm.
and then you can just drag them between the two windows.
Okay.
So if you're having a hard time navigating within one, because sometimes it kind of it plays games with you where it opens and closes, and you're like, okay, well, I need to get it there, but it just closed because I'm in where I want, you know, where I want to bring it from. The other thing is some of the applications that people have on their systems, like Nero is a very popular one, N-E-R-O, which is for burning like CDs and DVDs, is you can start up Nero, and then Nero allows you to navigate and add files that you want to burn to a CD. So you could actually pick and choose from any drive on your system, and then, you know, once you're done, you say finished, and then it will take that the accumulation of all the files that you wanted and burn them to a CD or a DVD.
Very cool. Thanks, Bob. Thank you very much for calling. And let's go to WaniWalk. Talk to Al. Hello, Al.
Hello. I got a question about using the internet. When you on a website and you click on a link or another page and it opens it in a smaller size, is there a way you can set it so it opens it in full page every time?
If you, the trick that I try to do that, if you want it that way, is to size those, other pages, you know, when they open up, resize them so they're open, and then just exit out of Internet Explorer or whatever browser you're using. And then it should work that way the next time. Do you follow me? You go to the website, you open up, and it pops open a little window, and you want it to be bigger. So you can either resize it by stretching the window, or you can maximize it, and then just exit out of it, and then go back to it again.
Cool.
So that's the way I usually do it.
And thanks for calling, Al. Good luck. Carla in Oshkosh, your turn. Hi, Carla.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My problem is this, that I have a used computer and it came with a restore CD and all the applications for the computer are on that restore CD, the operating system and trial version of Norton, McAfee, and a bunch of AOL stuff that I don't need that was for dial-up.
Right.
And I would like to be able to open the CD and take off the files that I want to use. But they're locked. There's a little key there, or a little lock.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's got the operating system, and if I and
right.
a lot of the applications, like for the graphics controller, I don't need that because I'm using a different graphics card, and the sound, I don't need that. I have a new sound card in it, and in the trial versions and the AOL stuff is just so. If I do a restore, I have to just pull all that stuff out, and of course, you know, it doesn't all come out.
What I would do is, if you're going to take the used PC, you need to use their restoration CD that comes with the system, because that's what is licensed OEM, original equipment manufacturer, by any number of manufacturers, from Dell, HP, Compaq, IBM, list goes on and on. In some eMachines, Gateway, in some cases, they're actually married to either the system board or the CPU, and they're licensed specifically for that system. And I know you said you have different graphics cards, or a different graphics card in that system, and maybe some other things are slightly different. So what you need to do is you restore the system with what you have, let it do its installation, and then once you're done with that and you reboot it and bring it back up, the first thing that I would do is make sure you have all the device drivers you need to get rid of the yellow exclamations that'll be in your device manager for your system, so that you eliminate any of those. Once those are done and you do a clean reboot with it, then I would focus on going to the control panel and into the add and remove programs, and I would remove all the programs that you don't want. And then once that's done, that part's done, I would reboot it and bring it back up again and make that be the restore point, and then go further and install whatever other applications you want to use on the system from that point. There are usually...
Can I then, once I've accomplished that, and I should clean boot before I clean it out from the stuff I don't want.
Correct.
Okay, once I have that system the way I want it, and up to date and all that,
right.
Can I just burn that to a disk?
Well, other thing, I was going to take it one step further. There's usually instructions either that come with that restoration CD that may be on the CD itself or may be part of the reinstall, to actually burn just the operating system, CD that you need, and any other applications that they're giving you full license copies for.
Okay.
That may be on the CD or, like I said, on the system after it's been restored. Or you could also go to the manufacturer's website, and they could very well have instructions for you there on how to do that. Then the other thing is, if you want a backup of the system, whether it's, external IDE and SATA drives and, different external drives that you could, ghost your system to if you wanted to, and other ways to back up your data. I have access, I think it was last month that I listed a lot of online backup sources for just backing up your data files, and you can even have that timed so that your system logs into a website that is for just storage and, copies your data files to it.
I think that's built into XP Home, too. The back part of the backup feature has got a schedule to it. Thank you.
Yep.
All right, thanks.
So good luck. You got a little bit of work to do. Yeah.
Thanks for calling, Carla. Good luck. Carol in Hudson, it's your turn. Hi, Carol.
Hi.
Hi.
Hey, I have a Toshiba laptop. It's about, five years old. I'm running Windows XP, and I use AOL, so it's AOL firewall and virus protection and spyware are always running. But what happens is occasionally when I turn it on, McAfee virus will say, there's a suspect file here. We suggest you do a virus scan. So I'll do a virus scan, and whenever I've tried to do the virus scan, and I've done this for a couple weeks now, off and on, and it gets to a certain point in the virus scan, and it just shuts down. The whole system turns off. And the same thing happens sometimes, like if I'm just online, just, you know, typing up something or either on the internet or just locally in Microsoft Windows, it'll just shut down all by itself. Is this maybe a virus or something that I have?
Yeah. Do you back up your data files? Do you have, you know, important things on your system that, you know, you back up?
I do occasionally, but not very often, I must admit.
Well, sometimes what happens with a virus or something that's infiltrated a system, when the antivirus acknowledges it and tries to do something, depending upon the sophistication of the infection, it says, hey, we need to take a break here. So it just, you know, it'll shut your system down. So, and sometimes some of these get worse to the point where you keep going after them, and it's like it almost like tries to unleash, you know, some other things, because it's like, I'm being found out. I need to do some other things. So I would probably try to download another non-popular antivirus application, burn it from a CD on a friend's system, and then with your system being offline, install the software onto your system, and then try and run the antivirus application and see if that helps. There's a number of them that you could do that way. I'll name some of them. I have links on, if you go to the InfoStar Virus Info Center and go to A-V Help, there are links to Bitdefender, AVG, Avast, ClamWin, and you can download those and, you know, and burn them to a CD and then run them from the CD. They won't have the latest on your the latest upgrades, you know, because you'll be offline, but I would try doing that just to see if it finds something on your system, and let it try and do the, you know, the disinfection.
What did you say your website is again? InfoStar?
Yeah, InfoStar.com.
Okay.
Yeah, usually when an antivirus program acknowledges something to do a scan on, and then it shuts the system off while it's trying to do that, is suspect that the file is infected, and it's basically trying to cut McAfee off or Norton or whatever it is to you know, it wants to stay.
Yeah, it wants to stay. Good luck, Carol. Thank you very much. Brad and Mozani, it's your, Kim I've got here in Wausau. Kim, hello.
Hi.
Hi.
We use, I work for an organization that has Windows XP Pro, and with the Daylight Savings Time update, I downloaded the Microsoft patch, and my computer is accurate with the right time and everything, and my Outlook is correct. But when I send out a meeting notice, it is an hour off. So, for example, a staff meeting that we have today at 1 o'clock, everybody has been thinking is at 2 o'clock. And I'm wondering if there are any steps I can take to correct it.
So using Outlook to send out this meeting notice?
Yep.
I would probably go and see if...
That's still reacting to the daylight savings time business?
Yeah. Because it sounds like it's an Outlook-specific function. There are a number of what I would call, they call them MVPs, Microsoft Most Valuable Professionals, that use the products like Outlook and Word and Excel. So they specialize in that. It's, and the website's mvps.org. And if you go to that, you can click on, I believe there's a link there, it says like big list, and then it'll have the list of all the different applications. And you might want to go to one or two of the Outlook sites, and then you know, see if there's any information posted as related to, you know, sending out meeting notices that are not keeping up with the daylight savings time. See if there's like a glitch, if it's been reported. The other thing is to just do a search of Microsoft's knowledge base and see if that's been found out as well. Because if your system's timed right and Outlook appears to be timed right, there's something still missing that was not either overlooked or not corrected in you know the change that you made.
Right. Okay.
If you go to infostar.com, the Virus Info Center page, I've got links on the, I believe it's right, the second line where it says forums. I have the link to the MVPS and then also to the MSK base, I call it. For MS Knowledge Base. What's kind of nice about the Microsoft Knowledge Base is you can pick your specific Microsoft application and then it'll search within that grouping for, you know, what you're seeking help on.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Yep. Good luck.
Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate it. And if you'd like to join in as we talk computers with Peter Greed of InfoStar of Madison, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 or in the Madison area at 263-1890. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant, our guest today, Larry Mueller here. We'll go right back to the phones and now to Brad in Mosinee. Brad, thank you for calling. Hi.
Thank you, Larry. I have a question for you, gentlemen, regarding setting up a website for a small business and getting a domain name and publishing. Now, what I receive emails from Yahoo saying they have like a prepackaged web domain and publishing.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds pretty fast and easy. You just pay monthly.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if I do set up a domain name and decide to leave them, can I keep my domain name or will they own it? What do you recommend in setting up a website for a small business?
Well, the site or resource that I use for keeping and registering and keeping and managing my domain names and for other people I've done it for is called GoDaddy.com, GoDaddy.com. And I remember signing up with them when they were basically, you know, the internet stuff, web stuff, you had to start and you really didn't have many customers. And now I think the last at least 2 years, I think they've bought ad space on the Super Bowl. But so they must be doing okay. It's usually fairly inexpensive and no matter where you put your website, you are managing your domain renewal and ownership through their website. And you know, you have to log in with a password and so forth. And a lot of features there. And when you actually register the domain name, they offer to give you a free web page, and you can also sign up for a pretty small website kind of package for maybe $35 or $40 per year. So it's really pretty inexpensive to do that from a cost standpoint for the registering the domain. I think depending upon when it is, sometimes they even have specials depending upon whether you're picking a .com, a .net, or a .info, or .ws. Or
do you recommend using the .com? Is it the .bz or .biz?
.biz.
Is that very popular?
You know, .com is always going to be the most popular, then .net. But, you know, if you have, you know, there are other people using the other suffixes successfully, you know, the .biz, the .info, and so forth. So I wouldn't say not to use them, but you know, if you can find a .com that works, you know, that's usually...
.coms are getting pretty crammed these days.
Yep, yeah, actually...
You're finding a domain name in the, I think it was the .biz or somewhere in that area.
But remember, it's really for, you know, if you're building for your customer base, then you're educating your customers to find you through that domain. If you're trying to do more of a, you know, global marketing, you know, to bring in the web audience at large, you know, the .com is usually more important in that regard. And then, you know, as far as paying for website monthly, I have not done that since day one. I pay basically $40 to $50 per year for a couple of websites and have unlimited traffic, unlimited emails. You get all the autoresponders you need for emails, you know, that you can put onto your email accounts. What an autoresponder is you know, you email a website for info, and then it replies back and says, you know, your inquiry will be handled within 24 hours or something
or
like
whatever,
that.
Or whatever, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't be paying for something on a monthly basis.
Okay, great information.
All right.
Let's see, what else could I tell you? Sometimes you'll see traffic deals and packages where they, you know, say, hey, we're going to kick your website out to a number of different search engines. They may or may not have a fee for that. Again, that whole thing is, it's a game. You know, they want you to sign up for these things. If they say they have, you know, the secret to your success, the rules on the web change constantly. And if you're going to try and do search engine optimization, which means that you want to be on that first page that, you know, Google, when Google does a search for somebody and you come up on that first page, believe me that if you're coming up first or second, there's someone out there looking at you and trying to figure out why you're first or second, and they will make the changes to their site so that they come up first or second. And unless you're on top of it, you will then, you know, get pushed out.
Sure.
Most people don't have the secret to becoming one or two because there are a number of factors that play into that. One is how many people link to you. What's the relevancy of your website to other people that are online? The robots that search your website, are you allowing them in properly? And are they searching on relevant keywords? I could go on and on because I've taught classes for a couple of days on these topics.
My domain name, if and like you said, it's probably not the best way to go. But I was just wondering, do they own my domain name or do I?
No, you own it, and you're registering it through ICANN, ICANN, which is, I believe, you can go to ICANN.org, which is the governing body of. You know, registering the domain names. What GoDaddy.com and other places are simply agents to get the domains, and then the databases get, you know, as new ones come online, the databases get updated probably. It used to be like once every 12 hours. It might even be more often now. But the database servers are strategically placed around the globe so that they get repopulated so that the domain names that come online get added to it so that people can find them by typing in the name versus a number for where it's located.
Hmm. Lots of good information there, Brad. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. And we'll take some more calls. Larry and Stevens Point, I think, is next. Hi, Larry.
Hi, Peter and Larry.
Hi.
The lady from Wausau, I think, with the daylight, I wonder if she just has a checkbox that needs to be checked in her calendar feature in Outlook. But anyhow, my real question, Peter, do you have any recommendations for a relatively reasonably priced character recognition software? I'm running XP, and it's an HP 5500 scanner.
Hmm. So the stuff you used with that came with the scanner not working?
No, it somehow got garbaged, and the disk that came with it was physically damaged. When I got a replacement disk from them, it was a different package that didn't seem to have the optical scanning software. So I was looking for something else, and the Adobe stuff is pretty pricey.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the stuff I've used with the scanner was, I think it's like ReadWrite or something that comes with the scanners. I've had pretty good luck with it.
Hmm.
Is that available separately?
It should be.
ReadWrite, maybe?
I think it's something like that.
Okay, I can look for that.
You know, I would type in OCR, you know, software, mm-hmm. And put in your scanner. You might even be able to, you know, still download something from them.
Well, you know, if it, you can it was a very frustrating thing with HP. I wound up on the other side of the globe and could hardly hear the people, and they went through an hour and a half, and then we tried to download, but that was going to be a 30-hour download, so I just got the disc that they sent, and it doesn't seem to do what I want to do, so I'm looking for a different
approach. I've used some of the software that I've gotten with the HP models and Visioneer, Paperport, and so forth. I've had pretty good luck with them, you know, even using the ADF automatic document feeder where they're, you know, feeding in 10 pages for reading in a contract or something like that so that you could, you know, maybe it was something from 10 years ago, so it reads in a Word document, and if there's a logo on it, you know, it skips the logo and just gives you all the, you know, characters and the words, and then you can turn that into a Word file or whatever else you want to.
That was HP software? Or?
Well, it's usually shipped with their scanners, but it's probably, it may either be a subsidiary or it could be a separate company that, you know, just licensed that, you know, for the scanner.
Okay. Thank you.
But the stuff works well.
All right.
I've had good luck with that.
Thank you much, Larry. And Wade in Fond du Lac, you are next. Hi, Wade.
Hi, fellas. I enjoy your show. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Thanks.
I had a computer that crashed due to serious hardware problems, so I pulled the hard drive out, put it in an external case, and plugged it into USB on my other system, which is XP Pro as well. And anyway, the documents are protected from the one computer, so I was wondering the easiest way to access those files. Because I had set up, you know, single user protection under the my documents originally.
Right. Boy, you're going to have to go into Microsoft's knowledge base and do a search. And have you tried that?
Yeah, I have a little. I thought I'd give you guys a try though.
Yeah, because what you're trying to do is you're trying to, you know. One is to be able to see the documents, and the other one is to be able to get, you know, seeing and touching and gaining access.
Right.
They're all tricky propositions with a protected system.
Okay.
I'm trying to remember how I've dealt with some of these.
Yeah.
Sometimes you have to... you do it cryptically, like you're doing it not through necessarily through Windows, but through the DOS or the, you know, direct to the operating system.
Right, right, okay.
And
yeah, I thought I would try that too eventually, but
number one, you got to be able to locate the files.
Right.
So once
right.
you've located the files, then you got to initiate a transfer. And then once you get the transfer from the, you know, the external drive to your local drive, then you really need to look at if you've encrypted those files versus protected them.
Right.
You'll probably have better access to gaining access to protected files versus encrypted.
Okay.
So I would...
Do you know of any software applications to help along that process, or should I just search the knowledge base?
Yeah, I would go in a knowledge base and understand more about Microsoft's scheme of things.
Okey-doke.
And then I would go into the groups at Google, and then I would also explore some of the other forums that are out there.
Right.
I've got links to a number of them on the Virus Info Center page at infostar.com.
Sure.
And you might even want to go to the mvps.org site and MVPS.
And
go to some of the are you using XP Pro for your
yeah.
I would go into the XP Pro resources there and see if you can find someone that can, you know, that discusses trying to restore files that have data protection on them.
Okay. All right. Well,
that's how I
that's a,
Yeah, that's how I pry under the hood. My daughter's got a problem with her system, and unfortunately, you know, she's the only one that owns Media Center in our family. And that's the problem. I didn't give her the XP Pro version, and I'm having a glitch trying to get her system back online. You can see it, but you can't touch it.
Yeah, thanks for your help, guys.
Good luck.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call, Wade. Thanks again. Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant, with us today here on the IdeasNet, and he'll stay with us right up until 12:30 here on the Ideas Network. Talking personal computers today with Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant, Larry Mueller here. Thanks for listening in. We will be going to the phones in just a minute, but we have a top 10 list that Peter has put together and does every month. And Pete, what have you got for us today?
They're all listed at InfoStar.com. Either click on current or the archives and scroll down to today's date. First one, if you're looking for a new notebook computer, there's a website dedicated to that called notebookreview.com, and I have a couple other useful links there. This next one is someone emailed me about they were trying to recover some lost photos. So what I did was did a little bit of research, and I came across this product, and I thought, well, maybe there might be some other people, you know, needing some help with trying to recover photos and video files and so forth. It's called MediaRecover.com, and it's worth, you know, taking a look at. Number three is a weblog dedicated profiling and reviewing new internet products and companies, and it's called TechCrunch.com. The next one is a technology news and reviews resource called Legit Reviews. Number five, this is interesting. Microsoft has so many products, and what they've done is they have an open source project hosting website, and it's called CodePlex.com. And you can use CodePlex to create new projects to share with others around the globe, or you can join others in projects that already exist. And then I've got a link there to the open source directory that's independent of Microsoft. Number six is an investment resource, and I put a link there, for example, for Investing 101. So if you want to just learn about what investing is, it's well organized and broken down. It's called investopedia.com. And number seven, how about access to 85,000 plus records of world climate data?
Oh,
go to worldclimate.com, and
there it is.
You know, it not only gives you the data for the area or the place that you're looking for, but surrounding areas as well, if they're relevant. Number eight, we've talked about this numerous times about file sharing and music networks and so forth. I haven't heard about this one before, but they claim to be the largest online music network, and it's called Blubster. And number nine is a resource for video games, gaming cheat codes, movies, downloading demo files for new games and so forth, and it's called IGN.com. And this last one is pretty neat. I put a link to, for example, their 10 best car engines, and it's a news resource, access to test data, info, analysis for the car and truck industry, and it's called wardsauto.com, and they've been around for a very long time, so this is
that's cool.
A new site, but the amount of stuff that's up there is just phenomenal.
And all those are available on infostar.com.
Yep,
go to those. All right, Bob in La Crosse, thank you for waiting. Hello.
Hi. Yes, I recently made the big jump from MSN dial-up to Charter DSL. However, I have my old email list is on the MSN dial-up, and I know how to send emails with that. You go up and you hit compose, et cetera, and up comes your email address list from which you can choose to whom you want to send. I don't know how to transfer that to Charter. I did go online to the Charter tech service, and they basically mailed me their entire operations catalog, which I was able to open and get part of, and my grandson, and he has to be good at computers because he's younger than 25, and I sat down and attempted to do it. However, it won't let us. It comes up, and I don't know what it exactly says now. I'm not in front of the computer, but we can't access the part where to get into my address list on MSN, and short of having to literally retype all the addresses by hand, how can I access at MSN?
So I haven't really used MSN much. Is it web-based where you log into an account online?
On my computer, okay. I go in because I'm online
okay.
on MSN, mm-hmm. and I want to send an email. I just go up to one of the tabs and compose email, and then the address list comes up over on the right-hand side.
Okay.
And but then I can go over there and pick and choose.
Who you want, yeah.
But when I go to Charter, I mean, I don't have that, and I
right.
would like to transfer the whole
right.
MSN list to Charter.
Correct. But is MSN like an application on your system where they have, they open up Internet Explorer to browse the web?
Yes.
But when you go to do email, does it look like another web page?
No.
Are you using Outlook Express on your system?
No.
Okay.
I have XP Windows or
okay.
Windows XP home version.
Well, the key there's two things that you really have to look for, okay? One is the ability to export. Okay? So if you have an email list or a contact list, is the ability to export that file. So maybe you're not asking the right question. You're saying you want to do this, but what you really want to do is export your list. You want to get that off or out of the MSN system.
Yes.
So somewhere that is saved, whether it's on your system or if it's in the online component of MSN.
It's on my system. But...
Okay. So you need to, I could probably try and do some more research, but you want to be able to find where that file is and be able to export it either out of the online system or off of your system. You need to know where it's located, and then you can import that into your next application. And when you export it, you want to do it in a format that's, I would say, you want to call it generic so that the other system can understand it. And that's usually called a .csv, which means comma-separated format or file.
Right. I think that was in the directions that
right.
Charter gave me on their tech.
Right. So once you get the file in that format, then the other destination where you're going to import it can understand what's in those records. So typically you might have first name, last name, and then address. You could have other data that you're pulling over. Some people might put in a lot of information, to example, the Outlook Express in their contact list, and they may have, the address and the business information and the website and so forth. And those are all called fields or attributes for each record. So a phone book has got first name, last name, address, and phone number. Those are all called attributes. But on the computer, they're called fields, and they're all separated by commas within each record. And then each record obviously being different. So that's how you to understand you're going from one system to another, you have to export from one and import into the other. Now, if you're using Charter, are you using their online system again, like MSN, or are you using an application that's going to be on your desktop, something like Outlook Express or Outlook or some other email system that's going to allow you to send it out? Do you know?
I don't know, frankly. The guy came from Charter and set it up, and
okay.
I don't think I'm using Outlook Express. No.
Okay. So, but you've been in Charter's system, and you've, used it for sending out email?
Yes, I've sent
okay.
emails out with
okay.
Charter and fine, but
okay.
I mean, I've typed in the individual address.
Sure.
Depends
on how many you have, in terms
yeah.
of the time to go through it, but you can... basically cut and paste, you know, copy and paste from MSN into the Charter system. And what you do is you highlight the email address. So you use your mouse to highlight the entire email. You press Control C to copy, and then you go into the Charter, and in their email address book, what you would do is then, you know, in that right place, press Control V, and that would paste that email address that you just copied from MSN into Charter.
And that might be the simplest.
So you could do it one by one, do the cut or copy and paste mm-hmm. that way.
Good luck. Thank you very much for calling.
So you got some options.
Yep, got some options there. Tom in Wanakee, your turn. Hi, Tom.
Hello.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
I have AVG 7.5 installed, and I also have Windows. Well, it's Windows XP Home, and I have SP2, the Service Pack 2.
Right.
I cannot turn off the Windows firewall. I'd rather use the AVG firewall, but I can't turn off the Windows firewall.
I mean, when you go into the firewall, it won't allow you to actually just click on off and turn it off?
No, it's shaded out. It's grayed. The on is the on button. It's got the little dot in the middle, like it's on, mm-hmm. and then it's shaded out. And the only thing that's bold is the box in between the on and the off. It says don't allow exceptions. Now I have another computer. They're standalone. They're both standalone, mm-hmm. and I've got AVG on that. Same, everything's duplicate, mm-hmm. and that works fine. And I was going to reinstall SP2 because, if I recall correctly, I think the firewall and everything came with SP2.
Correct.
I was going to reinstall that, and I have the disk or the CD, and when I put that in, it said, well, reinstalling this might affect some other programs, and we've loaded other software on, like for digital camera, you know, some Canon software and some other things. So I was hesitant to do that. But I'm really intrigued by this because I've searched everywhere. I've even emailed with AVG, and they tell me how to do it, but I email them back and said, but I can't do it, and I'm just not getting through or getting an answer. And I've searched every place on Microsoft. Can't find an answer.
Did you search through their knowledge base?
Through where?
Microsoft's knowledge base?
No.
Yeah. I would try searching, you know, to see if they acknowledge a glitch, you know, where you can't turn off the firewall. And if you type in Microsoft Knowledge Base in Google, you'd probably have access to it. In the InfoStar Virus Info Center page, I put up a link under forms to MSK Base is the way I have it listed there.
MS what?
It's MS Knowledge Base, but on my site I link to it, just abbreviated MSK Base.
Okay.
And you can pick your operating system and then type in, you know, a couple of different ways of asking the question. You know, one would be, you know, can't turn off firewall or Windows firewall, you know, see what comes up. The other thing is I would go to some of the other forum links there, not only in the groups at Google, but the MCSE link that I have listed there. There are some Microsoft certified professionals that might you know how to deal with that as related to some of the network installs that they've had to deal with.
And I've got your webpage up. Where's that best place to look, or where are you referring to?
If you look under the InfoStar Virus Info Center page, and then the second group of links, it says forums. And then within forums, you should see MSK Base.
Oh, Viral Info Center. Okay, there. Yeah.
And then forums, you'll see MSK Base, and then also MCSE, and I've also got links to the groups at Google. I would try those, and you'll be surprised. There might be a simple edit you might have to do in the registry to get rid of a zero or a one, or You know, there might be a file you might have to replace, you know, to set it right, or there may be a patch that is conflicting with something else on your system you might have to remove. You know, those are the places I look to find out how to do some of these things.
Thanks, Tom. Thanks a lot for calling. Joel in Suamigo, your turn now. Hi, Joel.
Well, hi. Thanks for taking my call. Peter, I am of the age where I have a whole pile of old vinyl records that I really like, and I've seen on the market some USB turntables that apparently allow one to easily convert the vinyl into either CD format or MP3 format, and they even supposedly come with some sort of crippled software that allows you to remove pops, hisses, cracks, etc.
Cool. I'm ready for that. I'm ready for that too.
There's a company called Ion who makes one. Yeah. Have you heard of such a thing?
I know they're out there. I haven't tried any, but I wouldn't be afraid to. What I would do is look at some of the reviews that are probably out there on the products. A good place to check for reviews on that stuff would be CNET that I've mentioned earlier.
Okay.
You could go to CNET.com. I think you could also go to like reviews.cnet.com.
Okay.
Would be like the main page for their review. And then, you know, just type in some of the products that you looked for, and also just type in some of the generic stuff like turntable, USB conversion to CD, or going from vinyl to CD. I know they also have some what I would call online classes that are primers to how to do some of these things, and you can actually sign up for them through them.
Oh, okay, very good.
And they step you through, you know, where do you start? What do you need for minimums in your system? You know, what are good sound cards? What are good what's good software? What are good turntables? Things like that. The one thing to be aware of is with music files, audio files, is that
they're big.
They're big.
Yeah, they're WAV files, aren't they?
Well, it's not only the format of the file, but it's also the size of the file and the conversion process. So where I'm getting to is you don't want to shortchange yourself if you're doing a large volume of these to go, you know, for investing in a system that can only handle the CPU ability, but also the memory and the storage capacity.
Okay, well, I have two 250 gigabyte hard drives and over a gig of memory, so ought to be okay.
Yeah, and then also you may want to look at, you know, an external for backing up once, you know, you've got.
Have a USB external.
Yeah,
too.
And then you're also burning them to CD, so you have a couple of different backup options.
Yeah. And then if you have ripped them to MP3, that shrinks them down pretty fast.
Yep.
Okay.
But
well,
depending upon how many vinyls you got, you'll be busy.
Yeah, good
but
luck.
But you get to listen to them again.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of good music from the 60s and 70s.
Oh, yeah, you bet. My wife wanted me to sell those a long time ago.
Thanks, Joel. Michelle in Green Bay, hi.
Hello, how are you today?
Good.
Hi.
Good. I'm wondering, is there an easy way to change a publisher file into a PDF?
A Microsoft publisher file.
Mm-hmm. So I can take it to my printer?
Boy, there are conversion tools that I know for Microsoft Word.
Okay.
I'm not sure about publisher files, but... that doesn't mean it doesn't exist out there. I'm pretty sure there's probably a company that's done that. It might be a standalone application, but I would do a Google search on that, you know, convert publisher file to PDF and see what comes up. There are a lot of innovative companies out there that have addressed, you know, markets or needs like that. And I wouldn't be surprised if there's something out there. I know there are add-on products to like Office to convert files to PDF files. But I'm not sure about publisher, but like I said, there's probably a third party out there that'll do that.
Okay, great.
All right. Yep, thanks.
Good luck.
And Jack in Superior, your turn. Hi, Jack.
How you doing? Good. I have a problem take about 3 or 4 hours. I get sick on computers. 10, 20 minutes exposure, and I have not only a headache, bad one, but I also have digestive stuff that keeps me down for maybe 24 hours. I'm really down. It's really bad. I've been able to look up computer vision syndrome, microwave sickness, radio wave illness, electrical sensitivity, and I still cannot use computers because they make me sick. Hmm. Laptops and the regular cathode ray tube. Help. What can I do? I'm a research scientist.
Oh, boy.
Have you tried any, like, the travel meds that they sell over the counter, something like Meclizine, which is like a motion sickness kind of pill?
I don't do well with medicines. I have a very, very weak constitution with regard to medicines. So I'd be very wanting, because I have to use them a lot. You know, I don't want to.
I can tell you, I'm just mentioning something like that because, you know, with eye motion and looking at stuff, that's just adds an area of, I don't know all the things that go on with the optical nerve and, you know, ears and eyes and sitting there and looking at a computer screen and, you know, and how quickly your eyes move when you're reading things and looking at them. But I can tell you that from my experience, I don't like taking drugs, but, I went on a cruise and my wife talked to a doctor and said, my husband gets violently ill motion sickness. What do I do? And at that time, it was a prescribed drug called Meclizine. Now it's over the counter in 25 milligrams, which is a really small dose. And I can tell you, it was like, you know, from the heavens, because I got ill and I took that one every 8 hours, and I was up at midnight eating all the feasts that they could lay in front of me and laughing and having a wonderful time for the rest of the cruise. So all I could say is, you know, it's a suggestion. It's a low dose. Consult a physician and see if it's worthy of a try. It's an over-the-counter. It's not by prescription, but if they give you a prescription, I understand it's like 100 pills for like maybe $5. So, but it's, you know, it's worth looking into.
And it's probably worth something. You probably should talk to your physician. Probably already have talked to his physician about it. But
you know, the other thing is, just trying to be, you know, larger screen maybe might be easier. I don't know. And, you know, the specifics of manufacturers, if you're using an old CRT versus, you know, flat screen technology, if that makes a difference.
A lot of things to consider there.
Yeah.
And probably best to see your doctor about it if you haven't already.
I haven't heard of something like that before.
No,
but
I haven't either.
If you're a research person, boy, can that be,
that's
like a tool.
That's a disaster almost. Well, good luck to you, Jack. I wish we could help more there, but see your doctor, too, and see what's going on there. See if they can come up with something. And, Peter, thank you so much.
Time flies.
Yeah, boy, it did. And you'll be back June 4th, Monday, June 4th, so first Monday of the month.
Yep.
And we'll look forward to that.
Sounds great. Thanks.
Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant, our guest today. And you can go online to InfoStar.com for some of the information we were covering on today's show. Thanks for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store.